Don't miss this exceptional evening of dramatic readings at Pratt Institute, Brooklyn. Selections from plays by Cornelius Eady, Jessica Hagedorn, and other award-winning writers will be featured in this program to benefit Cave Canem, the nation's premier home for Black poetry. Ted Sod directs, Pratt Institute hosts. For more information and tickets, visit CaveCanemPoets.org.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York, where the time is just about 7 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. I couldn't get much worse.
Thank you to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. Another Wednesday evening on Wall Street, yes. Joined tonight by Mike.
Hello.
Voltaire.
Howdy.
Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Red Hack.
Hello.
Kyle.
Hi there.
Jim.
Hi.
And Bernie S. down in Philadelphia.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
You know, it's a shame there's so many of us here tonight because we're not going to have much time to talk about anything. We have some things, some excerpts to play because we have some very special things to give away to people tonight who call in and pledge. We have to make up for last week when the phones were broken and we weren't able to do very well. We did okay, but we didn't do great, and we're expected to do great here because, well, we have a great audience, right? So we're going to be playing some excerpts of some amazing things that we'll be offering tonight. But first, a few moments for any updates. Has anyone been down to Wall Street this week? Well, obviously we're on Wall Street now, but I'm referring to the occupation of Zuccotti Park on the corner of Liberty and Broadway.
I was there.
You were there, Bernie?
Yes.
Oh, well, I don't think you told us you were coming to New York.
I was there Saturday and Sunday.
You were there two days. Did you camp out in the park?
I did not, but I probably spent a couple hours both days talking with people, hanging out, sitting, talking, seeing what was going on. One time it was like 2 in the morning, and the other time it was Sunday, it was in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm. We've been by with the 2600 van, dropping off various supplies and things like that. Also donated a whole bunch of brand-new issues, which if you've seen the cover of the brand-new issue, couldn't be more perfect. I won't give away any more than that, but it's you can see it on our main page. And that's been passed around with enthusiasm over there, too, as well as
well.
Well,
Emmanuel is the URL for our main page.
www.2600.com.
Okay.
2600.com. Yes, 2600 magazine is what I'm referring to. We have an interesting picture on the front of that. And also some interesting material that people seem to like. Camp down in the park. So a few of the issues being read very closely. We also have some books, and there's a library now. There's a library there. The library is even has this catalog online. These people really have their act together. If you haven't been down there yet, it's certainly worth coming to. Kyle and I just passed by. I'd say what do you estimate the number of people, Kyle?
I don't know, 1,500 to maybe 2,000. It seemed a little bit less than it has been in the past.
But we were there Monday night, and it seemed like easily 2,000 people there. And it's very hard to really get these numbers right. But I'd say a little bit less tonight, but that's, again, we're not there at the same time.
But, of course, the people that are there look like they're there to stay. It doesn't look like 1,500 people that are just walking by. Uh-huh. So that may be a number that changes.
And it's also very lively still.
Yes.
Extremely lively, a lot of music, a lot of people just walking around, exchanging information of various sorts, and a lot of sign holding, things like that. It's great. People are coming from all over the country to be here, it's something well worth being a part of if you're considering doing that. If you want to make donations, one thing we've been told that people really need there are old laptops, because what they want to do is they want to set up a public terminal area so people can do research and get online, do various things. If you have an old laptop that can load Ubuntu or something like that, they sure would love to have that. You can either bring it down, contact us, OTH at 2600.com, and we'll bring it down, or you can send it. They have an address. You can send it to Occupy Wall Street. Yes, you can send it to Occupy Wall Street, care of the UPS store on 118A Fulton Street, 118A Fulton, F-U-L-T-O-N Street, number 205, New York, New York, 10038. And they'll accept all kinds of donations. They're running a bit low on food. Don't send food in the mail. That probably isn't a good idea, but definitely come down and bring whatever you can. If you run a restaurant or something like that and you have a lot of leftover food every day, try and figure out a way to get that down there as well. If you're a master chef, maybe you want to come down and offer your services for a little while. All kinds of neat things are happening. They feed 2,000 people a day in their kitchen, and it's simply an incredible sight to see, all for free. So before you go calling these people freeloaders, think of all the things they're giving for free. It's simply incredible. So we're just a couple blocks away from there. It's amazing bit of history.
Yeah, and I'm excited about the kinds of creative solutions people are providing them. All this outpouring of support, and a lot of people get the sentiment. They're not still asking, you know, what are the demands or what is the demand, all that kind of stuff. I think people get it, and they want to support it and let it evolve.
Yeah, because the demands have not yet been formulated in that cohesive a sense, and that's actually a good thing.
Right.
Because you don't want to be preached to. You don't want to be told, okay, these are our demands, come join us. Now, how about come join us and let's work out the demands? That's where it is right now. And it's you're never going to get that opportunity again to really be a part of something that could be massive.
Yeah, so if people can donate stuff, please send it to them or contact us at OTH at 2600.com.
And one of the best ways to keep in touch with what's going on down there is to listen to this radio station, WBAI. In fact, we're going to be broadcasting from there next week. Off the Hook won't be on next week because we'll be doing a live broadcast from the park, from Zuccotti Park, Occupy Wall Street people. So that'll be fascinating. BAI has had good coverage from day one of this whole event, but the mass media starting to get it. I've seen lead stories in many mainstream papers that aren't necessarily condescending. Some still are, but it's definitely getting better. And I think the reason for that is because people really started to speak out and express their disgust at the way it was being ignored and put down by the mass media. One of the best outlets, believe it or not, for this information is Russia Today. If you can get that channel, it's on Time Warner. It's on some outlets. It's basically a 24-hour news channel in English from Russia. You can watch it online, rt.com. And interestingly enough, I was watching it the other day, and a very familiar face came on. Robert Steele, the very first speaker at the HOPE conference back in 1994, Hackers on Planet Earth. He was the first speaker, our keynote speaker. He was talking about how revolution is definitely possible in this country and how this is one of the signs of it. Very well spoken, and a big surprise to see him on Russia Today. But it just goes to show how the hacker community is intricately involved in all of this on many different levels. All right.
Manuel?
Yes, I was waiting for you to say that, Bernie. Go ahead.
The pregnant pause. The uncomfortable silence. I did notice that there was a truck parked next to the camp with a large array of photovoltaic panels generating electricity for people. So if they wanted to charge their their mobile devices, laptops, that sort of thing. They could do that, and I thought that was very clever because.
So that truck's back, Bernie, because I thought it was there and I didn't see it in person, and I was wondering when we were there yesterday if it was parked around the block or something, but apparently it's back, or you saw it over the weekend.
I saw it Saturday and on Sunday, but
okay.
I don't know if it's there right now.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't see it on Monday, so yeah.
I was also speaking with my friend Zimmer, who was there providing medical support. He's a trained medical person, and he had developed and was distributing wearable solar panels. It's like a panel that you can wear on your arm. It's not really big, but it's about the size of your upper arm, and you can walk around while generating electricity. Unfortunately, there's a lot of trees, or maybe it's fortunate. There are trees there over the park. But if you can find a ray of sunshine coming down, you can position your solar panel under that and generate power to power your mobile device. So I thought that was good and very creative. So the people there are really, really pretty smart and very innovative and just really figuring out ways to deal with living in that small space. Thousands of people in a small space, very amicably, and getting their needs met. It's impressive.
It's interesting too, because we've seen a couple of stories in the media about how much this is costing the city. And the thing is, if the city is upset about spending money on police overtime, you know, you don't have to have that many cops down there, because it really is self-governing and very peaceful. And all the expense is really the choice of the city. It's not something that's necessary.
It's not the choice of the residents of the city, to be clear. It's
no.
The choice of the, the mayor.
Yeah, city government is what I was referring to. I found the Russia Today piece. I'm going to play a bit of it that features Robert Steele.
Now talk to Robert David Steele, political analyst and former intelligence officer. Mr. Steele, the Occupy Wall Street protesters, they've raised everything from lack of jobs to global warming. Is there a common cause uniting the activists?
There actually is, and if you look at the Day of Rage page, it's electoral reform. These are not stupid people. They're very smart, and they understand that at root, this is about corruption in government and corruption on Wall Street. And until you have electoral reform, you cannot restore the integrity of the U.S. government. So, yes, there is a common cause, but it's a bottom-up movement, and so that common cause is being voiced in many different ways.
All right. You mentioned electoral reform. Is that what they want to achieve? And can the demonstrations achieve this, in your opinion?
I can't speak for them, but I am driving up to New York on Thursday, and we are having a meeting, and they are adopting, or I hope they will adopt, the 9-point electoral reform program that Ralph Nader, Jim Turner, Christine Tobin, myself, and several others have put together. My objective on Thursday is to get the group as a whole to consider demanding electoral reform legislation by the 4th of July, 2012. Or go on general strike.
All right. Well, if not, what do you think will happen if none of these are answered, no electoral reform is to happen?
If they don't adopt these ideas, winter is coming. Hitler found winter in Russia. Wall Street will have its own winter. I think they're toast by the 1st of November unless they get their act together.
Okay. Well, the U.S. economy, it has been on a downward spiral for a while now, and we've also seen Congress a stalemate, which nearly pushed the country to default. Why is this movement coming to prominence now? Why not then, so to speak?
That's an interesting question, because I was actually a Reagan Republican, and I did not realize that the downfall of the U.S. economy began in 1980 when Ronald Reagan broke the back of the air traffic control strike. He basically ended the role of labor as a counterbalance to management in the United States. I think the United States right now is much more desperate than people realize. We're at 22% unemployment on our way to 30%. We are at 16% below the poverty line on our way to 30%. There is no question in my mind that this is going to be a very dark winter in the United States. And unless the government restores its own integrity and starts paying attention to the public interest rather than to the special interests, I believe that we will have a form of revolution, initially nonviolent, but with the potential to become violent.
Yes, I wanted to touch on that, the nature of the protests. They did start out peacefully, and now in the third week we've seen hundreds of arrests, 700, more than 700 on the Brooklyn Bridge, and we are seeing a temperance flare. Do you think it would become widespread? We've seen sporadic violence. Will it become widespread?
Well, I'm a son of New York, and I have to say that on the one hand, I really admire New York City and what it tries to do, but on the other hand, it's the state police capital of the world. New York arrests more people for marijuana than anywhere else on the planet. They can now shoot down airplanes and do all kinds of intrusive surveillance. I think the New York City police have, on the one hand, been very well managed, and on the other hand, have gotten out of control at lower levels. If we have a soccer mom burn herself to death somewhere in here, it will move the country to the streets. My personal hope is that a general nonviolent strike will be used to force the issue of electoral reform.
Okay, well, thanks very much there. Robert David Steele, political analyst and former intelligence officer. Thanks again.
Yes, and thank you, Russia Today, for that piece, and including our own Robert Steele, first speaker at the first Hope Conference. And he has spoken, I think, at every Hope Conference that we've had, and we've had eight of them so far, and we're going to have a ninth next summer. I'd like to delve into something involving Hope in just a moment, but Mike, you had a couple of stories you wanted to get into quickly?
I wish we had more time this week so we could talk about these stories in greater detail, but I just want to make our listeners aware of two things that have happened in the past week that we should really be aware of. And one is that our friend Jake Applebaum, who we've had on this program before and had at Hope, was able to disclose in the Wall Street Journal this week that his ISP, Sonic.net, was forced to give all his email headers over to the government. And this is in relation to this bizarro WikiLeaks investigation that has yet to result in anyone charged with anything, but lots of secret investigations. So terrible that the government's doing this, but bravo to Sonic.net for trying as hard as they could to fight this and for disclosing it when they weren't, you know, when that was questionable. He also has email accounts with other providers like Google that we can assume were subpoenaed, but they haven't said anything because the assumption is that they just complied. So that's one government surveillance story here in the United States. The other government surveillance story is our friends at the CCC in Germany got a hold of a copy of the Trojan, which is used by the German government to sneak onto people's computers and investigate them for various things. So they were able to analyze that, and to no one's surprise, they found that it is very poorly written, so it can be abused to do things beyond its capacity, but that its capacity is, of course, greater than that allowed by law. And so we're sort of waiting for a response from the German government to see how they can get away with this.
Well, those are indeed troubling stories and things that we focus on all the time here on Off the Hook, and we'll continue to in weeks, months, years, in the future. You mentioned Jacob Applebaum, and he, of course, was also a speaker at our most recent conference, the Next Hope. We just heard Robert Steele, another speaker at the Hope Conference. It ties in nicely to what we're doing here tonight, which is our fundraiser here at WBAI. It's vitally important that our listeners pitch in and help keep the station going so that we can continue to bring you stories like the kind Mike just mentioned, and all the ones that are coming in the future. What we're offering tonight is something that we call the Hope Keynote Package. And what that is something we've never actually offered before. Every single one of our keynote and featured speakers at all of the Hope conferences, all eight of them so far, starting from the first one, ending with Hope, the Next Hope, which took place in 2010. We have Robert Steele as our first keynote speaker. We've got Jello Biafra in there. We've got Kevin Mitnick. We've got Jacob Applebaum, as we mentioned, but I'd like to play an excerpt from someone you might know from a more mainstream media, Adam Savage from the Mythbusters. He was a speaker at the last Hope, which took place back in 2008, and you can get all of this. You can get 18 different talks on 20-plus DVDs for a pledge of $75, 212-209-2950. And for a pledge of $125, you can get all of that, all 18 Hope Keynote and feature talks, plus a full archive of Off the Hook, every episode of this radio program, for a pledge of $125 to 212-209-2950. But I've said enough. Let's hear from Adam Savage as he addresses a crowd of hackers back in 2008.
Ah, God, it's good to be here. This is the group of people that actually understand what we're talking about when we don't even know what we're talking about, which is most of the time. I've been paying attention to this conference for a while. I'm really honored that you guys have me here. It really is my honor. I feel like I'm one of the least qualified people in this room. But being unqualified is my job, so I'm just going to run with it. What I have is about a 15-minute, maybe 10 minutes, if I could talk really fast, piece on obsession, discussing my personal obsessions, because I suspect that there's some minor obsessive-compulsive tendencies in the audience. And then I'm going to take questions from you guys and just have a conversation for another 40 minutes. All right, sound good? Okay. We'll see how fast I can run through this thing. About 4 years ago, The New Yorker did a piece on a cache of dodo skeletons found on the island of Mauritius. Now, Mauritius is a small island off the west coast of Madagascar in the Indian Ocean where the dodo bird was found, discovered, and eventually extinguished by human inhabitation or rats or whatever your prevailing theory is. Now, this article was about how archaeologists were very excited to find this cache of skeletons because it meant that they might actually be able to assemble a full dodo skeleton for the first time. While museums all over the world have different dodo skeletons, none of them has a complete and whole skeleton from a single dodo, because the dodo went extinct at such a recent time, 1700. Nobody was actually paying attention to extinction as the tragedy that we understand it is now, and nobody saved the bones. Nobody saved all the bones from a single dodo. Everyone's had to assemble theirs from many, many different pieces. Now, this appeals to me. I have a particular obsession with things of a peculiar type of rarity. Things that there's only one of in the world. Or maybe there's no one even knows where the one in the world is. Lost manuscripts. The Necronomicon from Evil Dead. Yeah. Tibetan clay-sealed tablet manuscripts found in caves. The Aristotle's Commedia from The Name of the Rose. Things like this really, really get me going and make me... For some reason, it feeds right into my love of making objects. Because the objects that I make are, of course, one of a kind, because I'm the one that made them. There's like this direct parity between objects of this kind of rarity. And the thing that really got my attention, though, about this article about the dodo birds was this photograph. This photograph was so compelling to me. It was so beautiful. There was so much personality in this skeleton. I could see that this isn't fossilized, that it's real bone. I could see the wire that the conservator used to assemble the skull there around the beak. There was so much story in this piece. And it got to me that I wanted one. Now, I have a little more money now than I used to. And I began looking around on the web. This is actually the dodo skeleton on the island of Mauritius in their tourism museum. It's my favorite. And I began downloading pictures of dodo skeletons from all over the web, museums all over the world. And I wanted to see if anyone sold a replica of one. I figured it was a long shot. I did find this couple that makes them for museums. They charge about $20,000 a piece, and I don't have that much money. But I did manage to gather several hundred pictures into my creative projects folder. I think a lot of you have folders like this. It's called Creative Projects. It really is just full-out obsession. Probably 40 gigabytes, 25,000 photos of everything I'm interested in. Rings, decoder rings, right here. That's a pistol ring. You guys have probably seen this online, just like, you know, checking the same sites. Airplane cockpits, people's workbenches. Ah, the ZF-1. Stormtrooper costumes. And I'm going to give up my geek cred. I hand-drew this map of Middle Earth for myself. So So one day I'm at the art store, and I'm maybe about a month after I saw the Dodo article. It might have been a year. But I'm at the art store, and I'm buying some Super Sculpey and some stuff for my kids. We're going to have a craft day at home. We're going to sit around the kitchen table and build. And I got all these photos that for some reason are ringing through my head while I'm in the art store. And I'm thinking, you know, I've looked at the dodo skeleton enough, the dodo skull enough, that I really understand its topology, I think. I've got it in my head, and maybe I could make a dodo skull. The thing you should understand about me, though, is that I'm not a sculptor. I have never been a traditional soft sculptor. In special effects, I was what you call hard-edge model maker. I could make towers like this all day long. Things from The Mummy, Destroyed New York from AI, parts from Terminator 3, Bicentennial Man. This kind of stuff, absolutely my bailiwick. I love hard-edged model making. When it comes to the soft stuff, dragons, faces, I leave that to the other guys. Some of my friends are the most brilliant sculptors I've ever met. It's their task. However, I understood the topology of this thing enough where I thought I could tackle it. And I found this photo, which is a hand with the skull, which gives me a size reference. So I promptly printed it out, and I kept on expanding the size until the hand matched my wife's hand, actually. It looks like a lady's hand. And then I had a size reference for the skull, and I began to gather all the rest of the photos I had, print them up to an accurate scale. And after about an hour or two, I had a reasonable facsimile of a dodo skull. I wish I could show it to you. The problem is even though it occurred to me at the moment to take pictures of the process of my first, quote, sculpture, for some reason, I was lazy and I did not take pictures. However, after about an hour, I had this dodo skull, and the armature wire I had going around to the back of it to hold the skull up actually turned out to be perfectly placed for a vertebrae, because skeletons is another thing that I've been obsessed with over the years. I have several dozen in my collection, and if I'm in the woods and I find some vertebrae, I'm taking them home. I understood vertebrae enough to actually to know their mechanical, how they work mechanically, the different parts ride upon each other, and I began to fake myself a dodo spine. I wasn't thinking about making a full dodo at this point. It was kind of like the only way you can clean a really messy room, I don't know if you guys have ever seen one, is to just pick up one thing at a time. You don't have to think about the whole thing. Just one thing at a time, one thing at a time, and eventually the room is clean. I was just going vertebrae by vertebrae by vertebrae, just thinking about the next one and keeping on going, adding some more wire, et cetera, until by the end of that day, I had a dodo skull and a spine and the better part of a pelvis. So I kept going. I downloaded more pictures of dodo skeletons, more pictures of dodo pieces, parts. Check this guy out. I found a guy, drawings, original drawings from naturalists who visited Mauritius when the dodos were alive. A whole dodo foot skeleton. This guy even put it on a scanner with a ruler on it. Thank God for him. This guy too. And so finally, after about 6 weeks, I made myself a dodo skeleton.
Oh, but that's only the beginning of the story, folks. This is Adam Savage speaking at The Last Hope back in 2008 here in New York City. And it's really the story about how he got is trying to get a full replica of the Maltese Falcon made in lead. I don't know if he ever actually succeeded in doing this, but I think what this demonstrates is the hacker mindset. How obsession does play a part in it, how research, downloading things, figuring things out, just being creative and ingenious in how you do things. That's a major part of what hacking is all about. And that's why he's one of our featured speakers in this package. That's why this and 17 other speakers will come your way for a pledge of $75, 212-209-2950. Was anyone here in the room when Adam gave that talk? Rob, I believe you were.
Yes, indeed I was. It was a heck of a talk. I mean, he kept going on like that for basically the entire hour. He told that story, he told other stories, and he took questions from us. And he was really, we knew we were talking to one of our own. There was no doubt about that.
And you have to see what he was doing, too, because it was a whole display that he was showing.
You definitely have to see the visual part of his presentation to get the full effect. It's wonderful.
And this is on the video, right?
Of course, yeah. Okay. You can see it on the video. This is just one of our talks. We're offering the Hope Keynote Series, every single keynote address given at every single Hope Conference, and some featured speakers thrown in as well. We have Adam Savage. Just for the Last Hope alone, what we have is we have Adam Savage. We have Steve Levy, who wrote the book Hackers, not the movie, the book. We have Jello Biafra. We have Kevin Mitnick. We have private investigator Steve Rombaum. We also have, as we mentioned before, Robert Steele. For Beyond Hope, 1997, we had correspondent Brock Meeks, who I believe went on to work with MSNBC. We have actually no fewer than four different talks from Jello Biafra because he spoke several times. And we also have Richard Stallman. We have Dan Kaminsky. We have Jacob Applebaum. We have all kinds of amazing speakers. We have Steve Wozniak. In fact, we're going to be playing something from Steve Wozniak in just a few minutes. All of this comes your way for a pledge of only $75, 212-209-2950. But the most important thing is you're pledging for the radio station. You're keeping us on the air, and you're keeping material like this coming to you in a variety of ways. We have people like this on the radio. We have conferences where we feature this kind of material, and there is no other outlet on the FM dial or the AM dial in New York City where we can openly discuss this for hours on end. So occasionally, yeah, we have to take a break and ask for support in order to continue doing this without commercial interruption. $75, you get this amazing package of more than 20 DVDs. For $125, you'll get even more DVDs because we'll throw in an entire 20-plus year archive of Off the Hook, every single show we've ever done, coming to you in full broadcast quality sound. But you got to give a call now. We stopped the recording because the phones weren't ringing while we were playing it because everyone's riveted listening to it, and I understand that. That makes perfect sense. But for now, we have to get a whole bunch of calls because, we're behind where we need to be. 212-209-2950. Rob.
It really strikes me the amazing range of people we've had the privilege of having as our keynote speakers. We have people like Steve Wozniak and Kevin Mitnick and, hacker figures like that. We've got Adam from Mythbusters. We've also got other people. We've got people like Aaron McGruder, who did the newspaper strip and later the cartoon, The Boondocks.
Yeah, Aaron McGruder was one of our keynotes. He's included in this package, too.
Yeah, and Jello Biafra from Dead Kennedys and all these different people from all these different walks of life who still their work in some way represents an element of the hacker mindset and what we're all about and applying that to all these different walks of life.
We have the late Michael Hart, who was basically the founder of eBooks and unfortunately passed away very recently. We have Mike, you know how to pronounce his name. Siva,
I've always referred to him as Siva V.
Siva V. Oh, that's a real cop out there.
Really long last name, but very bright guy. Formerly of NYU, now at the University of Virginia, one of the really the experts in the world on copyright
and
free culture.
Vyat Hayanathan. That's how I would say it. Siva Vyat Hayanathan. But I know that's not right.
But
he's
the only Siva V who's an expert in these topics, and he's worth hearing.
He really is. And that was from H2K2 back in 2002. So to run it down, we had in 1994, we had a very young-looking Robert Steele giving the very first talk. And this has never been made available before on DVD. It's brand new, and you'll be one of the first people to get this. If you give a call at 212-209-2950, you'll get his keynote address. Imagine that, back in 1994. He's as relevant today as ever. Russia Today just interviewed him about the Wall Street occupation. But in 1994, he was our first speaker. Former CIA operative, Robert Steele, very interesting talk. Media correspondent Brock Meeks in 1997 at Beyond Hope. Jello Biafra, the year 2000 at H2K. Aaron McGruder, as mentioned, H2K2 and Siva V. At the Fifth Hope, we had Kevin Mitnick, Steve Wozniak, and Jello Biafra once again. At Hope Number 6 in 2006, Richard Stallman, Michael Hart, and again Jello Biafra. At the Last Hope in 2008, we had Steve Levy, Jello Biafra, Kevin Mitnick, Steve Rombaum, and Adam Savage. And at the most recent one, the Next Hope in 2010, we had Dan Kaminsky and Jacob Applebaum. All those talks, all those amazing, riveting talks, you get for a pledge of only $75. And this is video, full video presentation of these events. For $125, you get the entire catalog of Off the Hook as well.
I'm just trying to do the math. You get 18 DVDs when you pledge $75. That's a number that's too small for me to really compute how many dollars per DVD. And you get the radio station. The DVDs are donated by 2600, so none of your pledge money goes to pay for their printing.
That's right.
It's really, I mean, even if we were selling them for that price, that would be an amazing deal. But instead, 2600 is donating them. All your money goes to keep us on the air, keep us doing the kind of reporting that we do here on this program, here on this radio station. there's really no excuse for you not to call 212-209-2950. Make your pledge. If you think $75 or $125 is just too little money for this sort of package, please pledge more if you can afford it, because, you know, you'll help fund it for the people who can't afford.
Yeah, so many people don't call because they think we're asking for too little. So if that's one of your concerns, by all means, you can fix that yourself by pledging more. Now, when you said there's no excuse, I saw a few people in the audience raise their hands and say, oh, but there is an excuse. I still haven't got my premium from the last fundraiser. And, yes, we hear you. We hear every single one of you that has not yet gotten premiums. Sometimes there are delays. We're still waiting for the TV Begons from Mitch. We're still waiting for the autographed books from Kevin Mitnick. But everybody gets what they pledge for at some point. In fact, in one of the more ongoing stories, those people who pledged for the Tesla material back in, I think, January, we had a very unfortunate situation where we didn't get what we were promised from them. We ran into them at the recent Maker Faire in Queens, and they promised to send us everything, and I think they mean it this time. So we don't forget. We don't forget, and you will get everything that you pledge for. You won't get it overnight, I know. We're a bunch of volunteers here, and it's everyone's doing what they can. But we are very adamant about making sure everybody gets what they pledge for at some point. So if that's holding you up by any stretch of the imagination, please don't let it hold you up. 212-209-2950. I see we only have one call on the line. We should have something like five or six. There are enough people down there to take those calls. And Adam Savage is still going here.
Making their own props from movies.
Still as enthusiastic as ever, telling the same story.
Everything. It's a level of...
And that's only one story that he told. He gave a good long talk there, and every single one of these talks is around an hour, maybe an hour and a half in length, and they all have fascinating material in them. All yours for a pledge of $75. 212-209-2950.
All this work for me, taking my wax master, actually spraying it with the plaster and prepping it, setting it up in his forge, and actually pouring it in bronze. Here's the bronze master just coming out of the mold. Here it is sitting on a scale. You can see it weighs 27 and a half pounds.
Okay, Bernie, I'm sure you can get another phone call coming in.
This is really an amazing talk from Adam Savage. I happened to be there for The Last Hope, and it was a great talk, and he was so accessible. He was, as Rob pointed out, he was one of us, and it was just a good energy in that room, and not unlike most of the other keynote speakers we've had since 1994. This is really an incredible selection of hacker history that you can sit back and enjoy either on your DVD player at home or your computer or just listen to it. This is a great package. It's just like, what, $3 or $4 a disc it works out to. But the main thing is you're supporting WBAI, which is really the only radio station I know of that's going to bring you this kind of information about hacker culture and what's going on. So please call 212-209-2950. We will give you this donation from 2600 of a big pile of DVDs of amazing hacker culture history since 1994's keynote speech at the First Hope Conference.
And Bernie, you did succeed in getting one more phone call in. Now, Red Hat is going to try and get a couple more in. Is that right?
Yeah, well, I was just going to say that, I mean, you're talking about talks that, you know, span about 16 years. That's a lot of history. There's a lot of, and I'm sure that in a lot of them, the speakers make reference to what's going on at that time. And some of them are very relevant, like Jacob Applebaum's talk about WikiLeaks and what was going on at the time with that. So, you know, you're going to hear that. You're going to hear that kind of evolution over that time period of how things have changed. I mean, the world is a really different place now than it was in 1994.
You already got your call, so you can stop and move on to the next part. Kyle, you want to get a call in now to thank you, Red Act?
Well, I just wanted to reiterate, this stuff hasn't ever been seen before. The audio has been available, but we've got...
Thank you, Kyle. You got your call. Continue with your sentence.
We've got... This is fresh video. We've never been able to offer this to people that want to call in. So please do if you're interested in this package. It was amazing. I did see this talk, and it felt like very warm and very very different than what you might get at a typical security conference. Something that may not seem relevant, but it totally is if you look at it.
These talks are not in any way dry. And like you say, the typical security talk where it's, okay, move on to the next diagram. No, these are animated speakers. That's why the keynotes, that's why they're featured speakers. And the thing that amazes me, I don't know if you heard this at the beginning of this talk, he feels inadequate in this room of hackers. He feels humbled to be here amongst us. And I just was blown away by that because obviously this guy is a giant in the world of hackers. People watch this the program MythBusters all the time. Such a sense of humor, such a sense of adventure. That's exactly what hacking is all about. And it's just amazing to see people like that believing in the hacker world as much as we believe in them and what they do. And we've seen the same thing at Occupy Wall Street. We've seen people embracing the hacker world as well. It all is so relevant. And I'm never too amazed to realize that. Anyway, we had three calls on the line just now. Anyone want to try to get a fourth call? And then we can move on to our next feature. Rob, you're leaning towards the microphone. Go ahead.
Yeah, going back to Aaron McGruder's talk, it was really funny because going back to when he was speaking, he was intimidated by being at a HackerCon. He wasn't quite sure what he was doing there. But then he started talking about his work, which at that time was his newspaper strip, The Boondocks, and what the things he had to do and the ways he had to like work his way into an industry that really wasn't willing or ready for his type of work. And his goals in that, and of course it would be years later that he finally got what he wanted, which was a hit cartoon version of his strip. And it's funny especially for fans of the Boondocks and of his work to see where he was at. I think it was 1997 or 2000, I think maybe that he was there and talking about it.
212-209-2950. If you want to pledge $75, you get all 18 of these keynote addresses and featured speakers from the various Hope conferences. $125, you'll get that plus a full archive of every Off the Hook episode aired since 1988, even before the Hope series began. Off the Hook was on the air, and you'll get every episode up through 2010. Which is really an incredible deal, much less than it's usually offered for. That's for a pledge of $125 to 212-209-2950. I'd like to move into our next feature here, which is basically it's Steve Wozniak, but he's talking about some interesting adventures at the beginning of Apple with Steve Jobs, who very tragically passed away a week ago tonight. In fact, we learned this last week. And it's amazing to me to hear how something that turned into such a monumental success worldwide started out with something that is so recognizable to all of us in the hacker world, that sense of adventure and just sort of fighting the system and doing things your own way. And I just hope we all take a moment to listen to some of Steve's stories here. Steve spoke at the Fifth Hope, which was 2004, I believe, and he tells some very interesting stories from a hacker perspective. 212-209-2950 to get that talk plus 17 others, I don't think there's anything more we can say, Mike.
I just want to point, this is just one of three talks by someone named Steve.
There was Steve's, yeah. Steve Rombaum, we have Steve Levy, we have Steve Wozniak. And of course, he's talking about Steve Jobs. So a lot of Steves in the world. We do realize that, but it's not going to be that confusing to people who pledge. It'll all be nice and labeled.
All with very different perspectives on the world and different things to tell you about it.
Absolutely. Please keep calling us while we play this, because if you call us and pledge for this, you'll be able to see it as well as hear it. But let's take a listen to Steve Wozniak at the Hope Conference back in 2004.
I went down there and felt that the Computer Club is information. Is something you've learned should be made available to the world. People can learn from what you and extend it and do other things. It's different than making products. So, of course, I would pass out schematics to almost everyone in the Computer Club, schematics of the Apple I, the listings of the code that was in it. I would pass them out. They were given away freely to try to share because it was a sharing environment. How many big companies like Apple ever started out by giving away their stuff for free? So it's kind of unusual. Nowadays, you go to a company, everything has to be secret, not talked about, not exposed, even if it doesn't matter if somebody knew what you were doing. So the Apple I, Steve Jobs, that was another one. He said, well, let's sell it. Let's sell a PC board. Make a PC board for $20, sell it for $40. We'll have to put a few $100 each in. I didn't think we'd get our money back. And he said, we'll have a company for once in our lives. It was almost like you're not doing it for seriousness. You can justify doing it. Just to say you're doing it, just like a lot of the hacking pranks you do. It doesn't have to pay back with success and money and all that. So we'll make these PC boards, and I said, well, if I design it, I'm ethical. It belongs to Hewlett-Packard. So I went to Hewlett-Packard, and we had big meetings, and I tried to convince them I wanted Hewlett-Packard to do it. I loved that company. I was never going to leave that company in my life. And they turned me down, actually, believe it or not, three times. And So Steve and I started and we built the Apple I and we started getting a little bit of fame in this hobby computer world that was to come. Not exactly hacking stories, but we had this neat little fun device. And as I wrote a BASIC of my own, I mean, I just did everything myself because whatever it took to get a complete computer finished, I had to do it. Didn't matter that I'd never read a book on it or taken a class on it. Had to do it. Had to force yourself to find the better ways. And you know what? When you don't know how to do something and you go at it yourself and you're smart enough, you'll come up with better solutions than the ways companies are doing it today. Almost always. The two things that helped me the most was not ever having done most of the things I did that turned out great, not having done them before and knowing the ways they're done normally, and also not having enough funds to just buy my way out of it. So this Apple One, I was at work one day. I got a phone call from Steve Jobs, and he said, "Are you sitting down?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Well, I got an order for $50,000. And that was the biggest financial shock in Apple's history, and I was floored. The one computer store in our area, and they wanted to buy 100 computers for $500 each. And this was big time. So I had Hewlett-Packard's legal department go to all the divisions to make sure I was in the clear, because I wasn't leaving Hewlett-Packard. And we built the Apple One and as a real computer. And we had to price it. If you're going to sell it to the store for $500 wholesale, what do you price it? We figured at a third, that makes it $667. Well, I was into repeating digits on phone numbers and things, so $666 came to mind. And neither Steve or I knew that 666 had biblical references until later. It's really funny to go to these websites that tell how satanic Apple is. So, anyway, I was still working Hewlett-Packard. We're getting real famous in our little community of computer hobbyists around the world and the country mainly with this Apple name. We're first in alphabetic order in all the comparison charts and had some super, super, super things, very few chips for what you got. And it was the first small computer to say small computers will come with a human keyboard. That was a huge, huge step, even though the Apple II was going to take 10 first-ever steps that we'd never back off from. That one step of using the keyboard was probably more important. The Apple II I designed extremely quickly, lucked into the best designs of my life, condensing many chips into one, clever different approaches, using chips for things they weren't even designed for because it got the chip count down. And this Apple II just turned out so good. The first time ever was going to have color. Where does color come from? You know what? It's one of those things where you have to try the impossible. I was not an analog engineer that I could look at all the formulas and the calculus for the chroma signals that, and how they got added and the phase changes and the circuits that do that. I didn't know that stuff. But somehow an idea floated in my head from what I could do, where my experience base was. Spin a little code around, a 4-bit code, 1011 maybe, 1010, whatever. Spin it around in a register at the right speed, and what comes out the end? It's a bunch of bits of ones and O's that are colored, look like colored TV from what I learned in high school. They look like colored TV signals. And some of them are spaced differently in time, and there are four different colors of them. Some of them are all highs, and that's a white. And some of them are all zeros, and that's a black. And I wonder if this would show up as color. You know, and sometimes you got to take a risk not even knowing if it'll work. And I finally built this thing in the first day, turned on a TV set, and there was color. Oh, my God. This is just, it was unbelievable to Steve and I. It was only a few months after we were introduced to the Apple One. So just amazing lot of designs in a very short amount of time. You can do that when you're one person crossing a lot of disciplines. I could come up with the ideas of what I wanted to do. I could sketch it out on paper. I could build the chips. I could solder them. I could write the code for it. I could test it. I could debug it. I could add features. I could get ideas, change the code, and change the hardware to match each other. When you cover all these disciplines yourself, you really aren't hung up by anyone else and having to wait and schedule things. And you can go about 10 times as fast on a lot of projects, you know, at least twice as fast on any project. I was very lucky. Now, we didn't have the – all of a sudden – this was the third computer to have a keyboard. In between us and them was one from Prosser Technology, and we knew that we could sell 1,000 a month because the Prosser Technology saw was selling 1,000 a month. But how do you build 1,000 computers that cost $250 each? You need $250,000. We didn't have any money. I didn't own a car, a house. We didn't have, you know, $10,000. We didn't have anything. So how do you do that? So we started looking for money. And we went to one company, Commodore, and they said, well, they liked our computer, but they're going to build their own. They don't need all these fancy features. They thought theirs was going to be cheaper to build than my clever design with all the color and sound and paddles and dynamic RAM and slots and high-res and all that stuff. But their head of engineering, Andre Soussan, left Commodore and came to Apple saying he thought we had the right product, not them, not they. So sometimes you have to sit down and do something for with a quality level in your head that makes sense, or it doesn't. We tried to sell our product to Commodore. We tried to sell it to Atari. We tried to sell it to VCs. VCs didn't like speaking non-business language like I would. They would say, what's the market size? And I would say 1 million computers. And they'd say, how do you know? I'd say, well, it's bigger than ham radio, and there's 1 million ham radio operators. You know, sometimes people can't listen to the simple truths. Eventually, though, we met Mike Markula. He was about 32. He'd made $1.5 million at Intel. He'd been an engineer, gone into marketing, very well respected. He had a home in the Cupertino Hills and a nice daughter, and he got interested in what we were doing and believed in it. And he talked with Steve Jobs a lot and came up with formulations of how it was going to change people's lives, how they were going to use computers in their own homes, and what it was going to bring them. And so he joined us as a third and equal partner and really gave us a lot of input that we needed. But you never hear about him because he didn't come from, like, nothing to starting Apple. Somehow he's always left out of the picture. A lot of important people are.
All right, we're listening to Steve Wozniak giving an address at the Fifth Hope, the Hackers on Planet Earth conference here in New York City back in 2004. And we're offering that plus another 17 talks by all kinds of people in the hacker community of one sort or another for a pledge of $75 here at WBAI, 212-209-2950. Steve gave a great talk. I think it went about 90 minutes. Any of you guys are in the room for that one?
That was a great talk.
You were there, Bernie?
I was. It was a great talk. Steve, talk about being one of our own. He was, you hear a lot about Apple and how it changed over the years, but this was really at its hacker roots. How Steve Wozniak came up with these amazing designs and shared them with everybody openly. He was really patient with after his talk. He sat, I think, for about 2 hours at a table autographing with a magic marker anything anybody wanted to bring with him, whether it was their old Apple II computer or their Mac laptops or whatever. He was just very friendly.
He was great. He was amazing.
He was just a good guy to have around.
He also brought the first Segway to Hope. This is why we have Segways now. He brought his own Segway, and people were riding it around. And we said, hey, that looks like a lot of fun. Let's do that for Hope number 6. And we did, and it's been a tradition ever since. But, yes, Steve was a great guy, and he gave an amazing talk at the conference, telling all about the founding of Apple and antics with Steve Jobs and various other people in the computer world in the early days. And, wow, what history. And it's part of what you get for, I guess it's for people who are really into the history, this is the perfect package for you, either the $125 or the $75 version. For $75, you get 18 talks of various keynotes and featured speakers at the Hope conferences. For $125, you get all that plus the off the hook archives, which I think is about 23 years of us in one form or another, and full broadcast quality. 212-209-2950. We can only offer this for another 10 minutes, though. Rob.
Yeah. If you've got a computer on your desk or in your bag or even in your pocket, you owe Steve Wozniak and what he's talking about in this sequence of events something. And that's just one of the amazing chunks of our shared history that you're going to get on this set if you dial 212-209-2950 and pledge your pledge and help us out and keep us. But most importantly, you get this radio station.
We're well over $1,000 now, which is great, but we need to bring it up closer to $2,000 to really make things right here, because we didn't do great last week. We did okay. We didn't do great, but it's mostly because the phones are broken. So we have one call on the line now. Let's make that five or six calls, 212-209-2950.
And one thing we don't tend to mention, but it is a factor. If you pledge to the station and you get one of these premiums, you also get a membership in the station. Which if you care about the station and where it's going, and you would maybe like to have a voice in that, if you become a pledger, you become part of the station, and you will get the newsletter and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, you will be part of what's going on here.
I want to play a little bit more from Steve Wozniak. But first, I want to thank Matthew from Baskin Ridge, New Jersey. I want to thank Zephyr from Montclair, New Jersey, and someone who only wants to be identified as a teacher from New Jersey. Everybody's from New Jersey tonight.
That's not right. People from New York, call, fix this.
Well, maybe it's because we're giving the area code. You do have to dial the area code. It used to be you didn't have to dial the area, but you do. Okay, I'm sorry.
There's no excuse.
212-209-2950. Maybe you have to dial one first. Maybe that's what's confusing people. We have two calls on the line. I really think we should make that four. Let's bring Steve up for a little bit longer just to give another part of his talk.
Love teaching those young kids. The fun they had learning new things every day and exploring. And the biggest day of all in their life was the day they got to be a server. And they learned how to toggle all the things in the Macintosh, and it made their Macs a server. And then they could access everybody else around the classroom and send files and stuff like that. And I always told them, if somebody doesn't protect the right areas of their disk and you get onto it, you can do anything to it you want to mess them up as long as you can restore it to what it was. Every year for 8 years, that was the rule in my class. If you do something to somebody else's computer, you can get it back to what it was. And they'd come up with the funny pranks that makes the fonts black and the menus black and the screen black and everything black. So somebody turned on a computer and they couldn't see one darn thing. But they could laugh and get it back to what it was. Or hide folders and things. I looked up once in the class, this girl, Sandy Runyon, says, Steve, my control panel's just disappeared. And, you know, and I'm, what? What's going on? You know, you sure? And she said, hey, another folder just disappeared. And I looked over, and there's little Daniel Lease hunched at his keyboard, kind of smiling. He just hit them. They were fixable. I actually did one like that I'm just about to discuss. But it was so much fun. It was more important to me in the class that everything you did with computers had a fun element, an attraction, or something, especially imagination and how it worked. And the kids sometimes even found things in programs. They'd say, I got a little arrow to move in ClarisWorks, Steve. I said, ClarisWorks can't do that. I did it. Sure enough, this kid had a bunch of little white boxes, one over the other, that made this arrow seem to move. So I learned things from those kids all the time.
It's incredible. I just to hear Steve talk about teaching kids and the things they're capable of, and just that whole hacker mentality of, yeah, you know, you can experiment, you can be mischievous, but just don't cause any damage. He gets that. A lot of people get that. You'd be surprised how many people understand that very basic part of the hacker world. Now, you can get this plus the 17 other talks, 212-209-2950 for the last few minutes of the program. We're listening to Steve Wozniak. But we have so many other people that will be part of this package. We have Kevin Mitnick. We have Richard Stallman. We have Dan Kaminsky, Jacob Applebaum, Jello Biafra. The list just goes on and on of all these talks that you'll get for $75 pledge. You'll get DVD video of that, 212-209-2950 for $125. You get all those talks plus 23 years of Off the Hook on DVD with full stereophonic sound, broadcast quality, 212-209-2950.
I mean, talk about education. Think of what an education you'll get if you watch these talks. You know, the history over the almost two decades that these talks span, the huge variety of topics, and you get them all in the mail, all in one package, and you can watch them at your leisure. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. There's just 4 minutes left to get this.
Oh, no, the personal computer people are here. I didn't mean it that way, but they're here, meaning that we can't be here. We have to leave, and we only have a couple of minutes, and after that, this package is not available. Now, I know a lot of people curse our names, curse our lineage, because we don't offer this beyond 8 o'clock. The reason we don't do that is because if we were to offer this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, do you know how many people would take advantage of it? Do you know how many DVDs we'd have to make? It would be insane. You wouldn't have to necessarily listen to Off the Hook in order to pledge for this. And that's why we ask people, please call during our 7 to 8 broadcast period on Wednesday nights. And that way we know. You can, if you're listening online, you can still donate. Rob, do you want to tell people how to do that?
Yeah, if you go to WBAI.org and click the donation link, there's an option there to donate to your favorite show. So our show would get credit for your donation. We can't give you our premiums for that because it's after our live broadcast, but your donation would still count toward our show and help keep us on the air. And you would get the radio station as your premium.
And you can get, I believe, radio station premiums. You might get a BAI shirt or something like that. But if you want to get this this amazing package of 18 keynote addresses, including Steve Wozniak, who tells many funny stories.
I can't tell you how well it worked.
Yeah, you'll find out what that's all about if you get the package of 18 DVDs, or actually, no, 20-plus DVDs, 18 talks, 212-209-2950. Pledge of $75. Pledge of $125. You get all that plus off the hook from the beginning to the end. Or the end of 2010, anyway. 212-209-2950. Join the callers on the line now. We are out of time, but you're not. You still have a couple of minutes left. Give us a call. 212-209-2950. We won't be here next week. We'll update you on the website as to when we'll be back. But this might be our last fundraising show for a while, so please take advantage of it. 212-209-2950. See you next time. Good night.
For over 500,000 young people every weekend, a good night out means breaking the law. Breaking the law. Breaking the law. Breaking the law. Breaking the law.
Here we go.